offshoot of some work that was done not in China and not in the Korean Republic, one of them, but Canada. We went Canadian to this. This took place at McGill University in the latter part of the 40s, just before the Korean War took place. What it amounted to was an attempt to find out on the part of a group of psychologists whether it would be possible to reverse the trend in the development of a person's intelligence and sort of make him go back hill, downhill, see backwards in intelligence, but we can reduce his basic intelligence. It was an idea based on some work that had been done in trying to improve intelligence. Now here is the basic experiment. So those of you who are interested in a do-it-yourself course in obtrusive brainwashing, pay very close attention. If you wish to brainwash your roommate, your sister, mother, father, or any other person you want to control, then here is one way to do it. The study, which the Yale psychologists were doing, asked volunteers from the college population, not at all like yourselves, to come in and get paid $20 a day, which in 1947 was a pretty good pay. $20 a day. For doing the following. Go into a small room that's around 4 feet wide, 8 feet high, 8 feet long, sparsely furnished with a chair and a couch, and that's all. Stay in there. Stay as long as you can. Furthermore, you're required to wear heavy earmuffs over your ears. The room is somewhat soundproof, so this cuts down a lot of the ability to hear. They were asked to put on translucent goggles. Imagine a ping pong ball and a as you might expect, in this case, engaged in the college of theater activity, that is sleep. It's not a long time sleeping here. When they weren't asleep, certain kinds of tests were being made on them. And after they had been in there 12, 14 hours or so, it appeared as though, indeed, the experiment was working. The young men in question showed some fuzziness of thinking. They were having difficulty forming conclusions. Despite the fact, you must remember, they were very well rested and had slept most of the time. That's when your mental faculty should be working best. They weren't. A little bit later, these students began to ask, still later, to demand that they be given something to experience, something to hear, something to see, something to do. The experimenters, being very kind people, said, all right, we'll do that. If you press button one, they'll let you hear some music that you don't think you love. Or if you press button two, you can listen to some 1936 stock market quotations. Either one of those. What would you pick them? These young men did, very frequently. Push button one, listen to that a bit, get disgusted with it, try to pay no attention to them, press button two. First thing you know, they were back pressing button one again. This was going on quite a bit. They were definitely experiencing a need for some kind of experience to come into their basic nervous mechanism. Some of them also reported other strange things happening to them. Primarily, they began to hear sounds. There were no sounds. Sometimes the sounds appear to be voices, and sometimes those voices actually said words. This is what they reported from the experience. Also, even though they had the translucent goggles, swirls of color began to appear in front of their eyes, and sometimes that swirl would take on a definite shape, and on a couple of occasions it appeared to be a human face looking at them through this misty substance of ping pong ball type goggles. After a period of 60 hours, none of these young men would participate in any further experiment, despite the fact that by now their wages had been doubled to $40 a day. They offered to get them 60, 80, finally 100, and still they refused to continue. This was so uncomfortable for them that they would have nothing more to do with the situation. By that time, they had experienced these hallucinatory reactions. They had also experienced this fuzziness of thinking, which was very uncomfortable to them, and they had also experienced this tremendous need for some kind of experience. This is basic. Exceptionally well. He played with health, he was well fed, warm, well clothed. He was probably some of the best kept prisoners in the history at that time. But you isolate them. Put them in a room where they have very little to do, or nothing to do. And they too will start to experience the same kind of thing that happened with respect to these college students at Yale University. After a period of time, when they begin to demand that they be given something to do, something to hear, something to see, you start getting letters from home, but the letters didn't change. faith in their previous way of life. You managed to send them doctored newspapers. Much of the newspaper having to do with scandals that are going on in the American government. All kinds of calamities, things of that type. All of which were calculated to undermine the man's belief in what was going on at home. Then finally, you began to filter in certain kinds of ideological material designed to convert that person from his previous way of thinking, his previous set of attitudes and opinions, to that of those who were his captives. Now, on most of our American prisons, this did not work. On a few, it apparently did. And they did have some changes in ideology, which caused them quite some difficulty once they returned and were reintroduced into their home American society. The story then begins to be quite fuzzy, however, because the Army Medical Corps took over, and these young men more or less disappeared, filtered back into society after going through some sort of medical treatment. And we don't know exactly how serious the final outcome or how permanent the final outcome was in this case. Now that's obtrusive. Brainwashing. Or a deliberate attempt is being made where you have somebody under your total capacity, captivity, where he has no choice, you are the one that are calling all the shots. Person has no choice whatsoever. The only choice he has is we somehow just don't cooperate. But the procedure there, day by day by day, and it's quite obtrusive, quite obvious, this kind of thing is going on. Now let's look at the other kind of brainwashing. Now that I've mentioned the first kind, I'll come back to that one again a little bit later, a little bit different kind of context, but now let's look at the second kind of brainwashing, the unobtrusive. Now this is the kind I'm going to practice on you here in a little bit, and the kind that I predict, but now somewhere around 95% to 97% chances of such kind being successful. Here, the individual is sneaked up on by the person who is trying to have a brainwashing. Basically, now, what the brainwasher wants to do is to get you to believe or to do something that you do not critically evaluate yourself, but more or less just go along and accept the kind of thing that the person that is doing the brainwashing wants you to do. We try to get the individual who's being brainwashed to form certain sorts of conclusions or attitudes or opinions, or to get him to do a particular kind of act uncritically, without recourse to logic, without recourse to reason, and without recourse to any kind of empirical evidence. Now, there are several different ways in which this is done. Let's start off by illustrating with you how easy it is to do. I need your cooperation now, and you try to fool me if you can, but I predict you're going to have trouble doing it. Even though I've given you all these warnings, you're still going to go along with me because I happen to have a technique here that really works. I'm going to ask you to participate in this by calling out answers to questions. If I say, in the poll, you can yell out a long comment or something like that. Do it quickly. Give me the answer as quickly as you can. Or if I say, give a person's name, say Mary or John or anything like that. First name that comes to your mind. Quickest thing that comes to your mind. So here we go. Very quickly now, give me the name of a piece of furniture. How do you pronounce the white of an egg? Or feelings, rather than reason, logic, or any kind of empirical evidence. Now, the word propaganda gets tossed around quite a bit, and unfortunately we attach all sorts of meanings to it that should not be there. We usually think of propaganda as being lies or falsehoods. It need not be. Sometimes they are, sometimes they are not. But the propagandist attempts to use an emotional technique to get you to come to a particular kind of conclusion that we want you to come to, using a number of well-known different methods to handle you and get you to come to these kinds of conclusions. If you're interested in propaganda, you can pick up any book in social psychology and clarify 8 or 10 different methods that are used in some degree of success. I'll refer to a few of them here with some well-known kinds of examples that you will probably be familiar with. One of the things that the propagandist will attempt to do to convince you is to try to tell you that he is just a very plain, ordinary individual, just like you. Running for president. But he's just like you, you see. And so he will use the sort of plain folks of people. This is what that technique is called. Mayor Daley has been very successful in using the technique of the plain folks. And incidentally, so did Al Capone today. Very successful kind of intervention. In fact, it is said that on Al Capone's deathbed, all he wanted to do was bring people happiness and people's love. No kind of anything. Just a plain old ordinary guy, just a nice person you like to have next door neighbor, that guy. Plain folks and people. You find politicians using this quite a bit. And so you find people like, well, Captain McGovern, going out in his overalls and working with farmers. They always like to go down, you see, and play little kids. Well, that's the plain folks kind of reaction. Littering generality, second technique. I'm not going to give it 2 or 3 of these techniques. You may be familiar with them. Littering generality. Make something that really is very common and ordinary and not very meaningful at all. Make it sound good. For example, I kept hearing in the last 6 months something about peace with honor. Now, peace is a beautiful thing. It goes on. But now, analyze what was peace with honor as it has been used in the past few months. What does it mean? It means we're going to win. We're going to murder. That kind of thing. That is not, you see, the message of peace with honor. The peace with honor sounds so much better than saying we're going to shoot you down with napalm until you are bloody and battered and give up. Essentially, this is about what it seems to mean. We're going to get you on your knees, and that's peace with honor. Or, you might have heard one of the candidates in the recent few years speak of an elite core of impudent scums. Those are very beautiful words. Elite core of impudent scums. Beautiful language to describe you, college students, what he was talking about. But it was a name-calling technique. Name-calling combined with literary generality. If you are a snob, call it that. That tends to discredit you in the eyes of people that you're trying to persuade. Or of Indian stops. Or, not very long ago, you probably remember the incident where one man referred to another candidate as Danny Boy. Calling names, you see. What do you mean by that? What is Danny Boy? Danny Boy is a little boy. You don't call a boy until the man's jump. That's essentially the message. Anymore. These are the techniques of the propagandist, along with such things as endorsement by famous people. So we have Frank Sinatra endorsing Nixon, and we have John Wayne endorsing Nixon, and we have Jane Fonda endorsing McGovern, these kinds of things. Now you're not quoting Jane Fonda or Frank Sinatra. In fact, you probably wouldn't want either one of them. Work very well. But here they are, you see, standing by the side, and I am for your government, or I am for your government. And it has nothing to do with the issues, nothing whatsoever. In fact, if you ask Jane Fonda what it's all about, she may not know. Frank Sinatra, I'm certain, didn't know. Yet, here is the effect. All right, that's the endorsement technique. The bandwagon technique, this is the last one I'm going to talk about. Look. Everybody's going to vote for Nixon. You better be out there voting too. You don't want to be on the losing side, do you? And that was the kind of technique that was used quite successfully, apparently, in the South. Everybody going in the direction of the Republican Party this year, and you're going to be on the bandwagon too. Otherwise, you're going to be in a minority. You're going to look silly when it comes to election day, and you've lost. You lost your bets and all that news, and you have won. The bandwagon effect. You see that quite a bit at the political convention, where people try deliberately to get this thing moving to such an extent that the enthusiasm and the emotion of the moment carries them right along to the ultimate conclusion that the person wants to take place. Now, a special kind of propaganda, one that you are submerged in literally every day, is what we call advertising. You may have recognized some of these techniques that I've been talking about here. Everybody's doing it. You better go out and buy a Toyota or something like that, you see. Or you refer to your competitor's product with a kind of a sneer, name calling, that old stock, you see, as though it were almost a dirty word that you wouldn't have to be heard talking about in public. The use of beautiful girls in magazines to try to sell automobiles has nothing to do with the automobile. You don't buy the beautiful girl along with your Chevrolet. Again, there she is, standing there. You see her on television, magazines, newspapers. Nothing at all. An endorsement, you see. Here, John Wayne driving his big Ford pickup. That kind of business. And so you buy it not because you want the Ford pickup, but you want to get John Wayne in there with you, you see. That kind of business. All very unfair approaches. And I note just today that the Louis Harris poll has looked over and evaluated the credibility of large groups of people in this country. Politicians are about the middle. College professors slightly above, I'm happy to say. But the people that fall all the way to the bottom are the antibodies. But still worries. It's still a multi-million-dollar business. Just inside the law, dealing with things that sometimes are lie and nearly always are couched in emotional propagandistic ways. They would just tell you what the product is and tell it factually, and you wouldn't use the matter. You wouldn't use the term propagandist to describe it. But we can find some remarkable kinds of changes in buying habits of individuals based upon different kinds of emotional advertising techniques. One of my predecessors in psychology, John Watson, a struggling, pitiful, underpaid college professor, as we all are, gave up being a college professor and went to the advertising business back in the 20s. When he died, he had $1 million estate. That would take a great long time to go out and make your living just small, but everybody in the law gets it. Everything's perfectly good. All right. Advertising. Craig Stakefield, not too long back in economic trouble. So they began to couch their singing commercials on the radio and television in rock music. And their sales skyrocketed. Now, who likes rock music and who bought that? You see, young people. Well, advertising is a form of brainwashing. I will pass quickly over another kind of brainwashing that occurs. It's talked about. It seems to be in quite a bit of emotional disrepute itself, but it's something that came from my own profession, I'm sorry to say, and that is the technique which is called behavior modification. The popular word in behavior mod. You want to get little Johnny to sit in his seat in the classroom and not cause trouble. And when he does sit down, you throw him an M&M or something like that. Or you say, nice boy, or something of that nature. After a time, Johnny will start sitting more in his chair and causing us less trouble. Again, the idea is to get somebody else to do what you want them to do. And it seems to work pretty well with some of these problems we find in schools, nuisances, things of that kind. It also seems to work with some mental patients, and basically what it does, apparently, is to get them calmed down so that it makes life a little more bearable for the attendants in the hospital. But it seems to work. You reward the kind of thing that you want the person to do, and you ignore or you punish those things that are disagreeing with what you are particularly interested in. So let me pass over that one. That one's again another one that you can pick up from some psychology course, or if you want, after we're finished here, I'll elaborate very extensively on it. One other kind of brainwashing before I deal with the final question of how you go about resisting all this. This is one that you and I and everybody in this room are destined to experience unless we're prepared for it. It is not coincidence that in this country, that at age 65, Victor return of mental growth takes a tremendous tumble. The measured intelligence of an individual starts to drop a little bit somewhere in late 20s. Some of you are already over the hill. Like that. That's for you. The process is going on. Brain cells are dying and die every day. They die from time to barn until you actually die yourself. But at age 65, this takes an accelerated turn very quickly. Things like that begin to happen. And in a few years, or sometimes in a few months, we start referring to the person as senile, or in the second childhood, or childish, or can't think straight, can't remember things. Things with this crime began to happen to the individual. But it doesn't happen in all individuals, and it should not happen in most individuals. The people that do have this tremendous acceleration on drop on the curve of mental growth, a deterioration of mentality, are those individuals who also retire at age 65. That's a magic age. After 65, you retire. Many people have not prepared for that retirement. They retire to the rocking chair, or they retire to the Uber tube, or something like that, you see, and that's going to be their life. What they have done is literally, voluntarily, put themselves in a situation very much like the Korean War people, very much like the students at Yale University. They have gone into a situation where they have very little stimulation coming in. The result is a beginning of a deterioration of the mental faculties that they had prior the time when they deliberately isolated themselves in a particular way. Result is rather quick deterioration of mentality. But individuals who have prepared for retirement and who are quite active and have many things that they want to do generally do not show this kind of deterioration for many, many more years. If they keep stimulus inputs coming all the time through reading, through travel, through attending plays, concerts, operas, engaging in all sorts of activities that keeps the mental faculties alive and active, those people do not show the premature senility that their brothers and sisters do at age 65. My favorite case of this particular type is a lady who has now just passed her 93rd birthday. 93. She lives in Los Angeles once a year. But once a year at least, she gets on a Greyhound bus in Los Angeles and travels all the way to Connecticut. Can you imagine that? Just going and getting on a bus for more than 10 minutes is enough to drive me up the wall. But Grandma, we'll call her Mom Green, she's known by some of her friends, likes this. She goes right straight through. Sometimes she'll stop for the night. One time they got stranded in a snowstorm in Colorado somewhere, and she just loved it. Everybody else in the bus was pretty unhappy and mad, but she was having fun. 3 years ago, when she was a mere 90, she took the course in biology at the University of California, Los Angeles, with 300 students, and she got the highest grade. I remember that was the only course that she was taking, so take that into consideration. Anybody that's full academic goals, that grandma here is quite well. She reads at least 4 books a week, at the minimum. And sometimes she can go to as many as 15 in a week. All kinds of subjects. She can talk intelligently on almost any kind of thing you bring up. And cite chapter and verse of things that she has read. She was an undertaker, by the way. Reached the age of retirement. A long time back, long before you were born, you see, at age 65, she retired. One of her hobbies is rather grotesque in a way, but she had one of her customers, shall we say, who came in, brought in. Turned out he had no relative. And she had been wanting to do this for quite a long time, but she got permission from the authorities to make it possible. Now, she will tell you about how she does it, by the way. She likes to talk about these things at dinner, how she pulls brains up in the ears. Stuff with different kinds of fibers inside. You can imagine talking like that while your wife is getting her. But every now and then, part of her hobby, you see, she goes in, scrapes off the mold, and see how it's doing. But that's like a 1930. She's that. She's a lot of very good dress. There are some great shit. And I don't think she's joking. If she talks about this, then seriously.
Yes, sir.
I try to
remember.
Oh, here we have Fred Ball and her family. Just as bright and active today as she was 50 years ago. They're probably not bright, but she is still quite active. Yeah. But not what she's been able to do. She will soon have retired 30 years ago. She's still quite active mentally. And incidentally, most of her bodily functions are working quite well. And she recently was on some television program. She loves to know about the time that she danced with Lauren Quinn. Well, I'm not sure that I care to live that long myself. That's Mrs. Wells or anyone else. So there begins to tell the story how you go about combating at least that kind of potential brain deterioration, which is the first stage in brainwashing. You combat it by preparing yourself to keep yourself active mentally in your 5 years. Now that's the kind of brainwashing that speaks up on. The other one, the obtrusive kind of brainwashing, the kind which the American servicemen were subjected to in Korea, the same kind of answer appears to work there. And again, let me cite you a case of a lady. This is the case of Dr. Edith Bone, who was placed in solitary confinement in Hungary for 8 years. 8 years in solitary confinement. Now that is truly cruel and unusual punishment. Solitary confinement. 8 years. In a small cell, which was lighted by a 15-watt bulb or less, what was she going to do? Fortunately, Dr. Edith Bone knew about all of these techniques. She was able to resist them by keeping herself mentally active. One of the things she did was take an imaginary walking trip across Europe. She started out in Budapest, where she, her prison was, and in her imagination, and as she paced up and down her 8-foot cell, she imagined what things were like as she moved up the River Danube into Germany, across France, eventually the English Channel to England, and then back home again by a different route. This took a period of many, many weeks to accomplish this imaginary walking trip. Then she made lists of all the words that she knew in 6 different languages that she had some familiarity with. This took her a long time. She kept track of the days of the week, the months and everything by taking a little piece of the black bread as part of her daily ration. What did that make her fulfill for the moment? Silly. Every 7th month is a big one, you see. It's the end of 1 week. And the end of 30 or 31, she can indicate by 2 or something of what day of the month it was. This took quite a bit of her time. She found a nail driven into the bottom of the cell to the floor. With a great deal of effort, she got that nail out of there and managed to bore a small hole in the door of her cell. Why? Well, she could look out to see and see what was going on in the hole. All she could see were people's feet walking out of the sunlight. And it kept her active. And for 8 years, she was doing things like that. And when she was finally released, apparently she had suffered very little deterioration and was able to write a book about it. But again, keeping yourself mentally active is the basic technique. Now, the unobtrusive kind of propaganda, the one that does sneak up on you, requires a perpetual kind of vigilance on the part of the individual, but it also is subject to a particular kind of preparation. I think perhaps I can illustrate this with a diagram on the blackboard, what I'm talking about. The purpose of the propagandist, or the brainwasher, the unobtrusive brainwasher, the advertiser, the behavior modifier, any of those individuals, is to get you to channel your behavior into one particular kind of route. Here you are being forced into a particular kind of conclusion about what the brainwasher wants you to do. Only one way that you can satisfy them, and their techniques are plenty to try to keep pounding away at you to get you to flow your ideas into one particular kind of channel. There is a counter technique, however, that I think that is very effective here. Resistance of this type requires you to prepare yourself so that you can see as many alternatives to controversial questions as possible. This essentially diagrammed this way, you are pointing yourself in many different possibilities. You're opening yourself up to all sorts of interpretations of things that might have one side, two sides, or many sides. As opposed to what the propagandist is doing here and trying to narrow them down. I would call the two techniques that I have in mind here, this one, propaganda, and the other one, quite antagonistic to each other. And this one I would give the name of education. Education has just the opposite goal from that of the propagandists. Education should be a condition whereby an individual opens himself up to all sorts of new knowledge, new possibilities of interpreting old knowledge, and the possibility of finding still new answers to questions that are actually new, not only to you, but new perhaps to your whole race. If education is doing something more like what we have to do, right, I would not call that education. That would be an attempt to narrow you down, to get you to form particular kinds of ideas that are in consonance with what the brain wants you to do. Now, let me point out right at the beginning, there are certain kinds of things that you have to follow according to this diagram on the right. If you want to learn French, you have only one way to do it. There's only one way to pronounce your diphthongs and your nasals if you want to get along with friends. So those kind of things are narrower. And indeed, some of my friends in psychology have said that language is the biggest brain motion of all. But it's necessary for everybody to communicate with our fellows. But there are certain kinds of things that you will always have difficulty getting to the French, the Germans, because they have a different type of language concept. You simply do not share. You can share something, I spent quite a bit of time in the Orient, particularly in India, and every now and then I recognize that there are certain kinds of things that I cannot communicate to my Indian friends, and they in turn cannot communicate to me. Because we have been sufficiently narrowed right from the very beginning by this process of language. A few other kinds of rules and regulations you have to follow. There's only one way to add one to one, make two. Those kinds of things. Simple kinds of reactions like learning to ride a bicycle without falling off and breaking your teeth, that kind of thing. These are narrowing processes. But in things like philosophy and interpretations of history, in psychology, sociology, the humanities in general, things that have to do with the appreciation of beauty, the aesthetic things, the ability to think, all of these should be opening up processes, much like a flower opens up in the morning sun. Education, which I think possibly in the long run is the most successful of the prophylactic events that you can do to ward off the potential effects of any of these brain waves. I promised to finish 8 minutes ago. I apologize for going over time. Let's see if there are any questions now. For the remainder of the time, if you wish to name it. Yes. Ordinarily, what music does is to try to soothe you down and try to get you over that shock of all of this maelstrom that you are poured into when you visit the AHC, to get the Driftway or something like that. So you're get so much information in. This is an attempt to calm down and follow the maelstrom. But I doubt that there's any kind of music that can be played when you like Tide or Willow. Or post-toasties or anything like that. And incidentally, while we're on that subject, this business about flashing on the television screen so rapidly, like things like buy Coca-Cola, and you feel a need to drink Coca-Cola, is not true. That is wrong. That never did work. Yes, question back here. Yes. All right, I see we've had a little communication there about words. Yes, this was called subliminal perception, which does work in some cases, but not in that particular way. And don't be afraid that somehow the movies are going to be flashing things on the screen that you don't see, yet you feel the impulse. Well, this does not work at all. Yes? In the case of the Korean veterans, they were put into a kind of isolation in the Battle Gorge Hospital, and we don't know very much about what happened to them because, the difficulty of getting them back out of their families, getting them back to normal kinds of environment, was bad enough. We without having them come back into their communities and being known as a germ theorist. Well, this kind of thing was hushed up, and I think that probably that's the best way to handle the situation. Yes?
About Christians, they feel they're more this, I don't know what you call it, they get more of a pattern of, you know, specifics as far as should they be open to this?
I think they certainly should. I think anybody who calls himself a Christian and is not open to this kind of thing probably is not a very good Christian.
But still, they have their box in here.
I'm not sure it's all that stuff. Someone, those of you want to have, trying to get Jesus out there, but you're trying to use it, yes, that would be out of this very much situation. But I don't really think you find that. Most Christians, some you might. But I don't think that would be the mark of Christians. Because you said that they will hide the brainwash. Or they're trying to brainwash me, or I am trying to brainwash the brainwash. So that term really applies here. You try to convince somebody that Christianity is a good way of life. You can use emotion, but you should also give reason and logic. God has this empirical evidence. In fact, the people seem to be happier when they have adopted some sort of religious affiliation, some sort of beliefs. But you can't have that great logic. All right, any other questions or if any of your meetings questions? Before they drop that. Okay, so many questionnaires, really.
Yes.
Well, I was kind of student for 3 years, and I bought it, like fish, buying the book, the water. But then I tell my students, later on I learned to read. The Canarian approach is what I want now under some of the simplistic views of the human organs, mechanistic kind of view. I have yet to meet a human being that I would call simplistic. They are very complex people. I will never be able to figure them out entirely. I don't know how anybody like Skinner can say it on a simple basis. A search done with rats in a cage and Skinner's type addition, subtractions. He was working on calculus at the time he got I'd ask him, I'm Fritz, what is the square root of 625? He barked 2 times, Paul barked 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5. I bring him in an audience like this, put him at the other table, after he calmed down, looked around a bit. All right, somebody back there, give me a problem, and I'll give it to Fritz, and Fritz will give you the answer. Most of the time he's right, sometimes he's wrong. And no one ever really figured out how I was getting the answers. So, it's a very simple kind of thing. I'm making those motions right now, I don't know whether you can see them or not. But when my left hand is like it is now, it's great to keep on working. When it's like this, stop. In the dark, stop. Everybody pay attention to that. And that's behavioral modification. Did the dog know arithmetic? Behavior modifiers and I say, yeah, I say nonsense. I'm annoying. Okay, any other questions? Surely you don't want to go back out in the cold night air that way. Alright, shall we stop there?